Right, welcome back to the Sheep Fan Meet the Flockers production. And this is episode 2 from part 1 of Echoes of the Huxleys. The whole series is called Brave New World Order. One of the interesting things with this type of research are the doors that materialise in front of you. These doors I view as information opportunities. Once you open that door, sometimes it's an empty room and there's nothing there. Sometimes it's a treasure trove that takes you onto many, many other doors and journeys, or journeys within journeys. And it's still intertwined, though, with your original starting point. That's what makes it so fascinating. And I wanted to include this research, although it's not directly about the Huxleys, it's sort of linked to the Huxleys, in this presentation for a number of reasons. Firstly, because there are several connections with the Huxleys. Secondly, it paints an important picture of the 60s construct. And thirdly, it continues the important work already achieved initially by Dave McGowan's book, Weird Scenes Inside the Canyon, and our mate's trilogy of books, Mark Devlin, and his Musical Truth trilogy. And Mike Williams' Beatles research, and Crow 777's Crow and Jason's fantastic shows on similar subjects that they've just restarted, actually, and they've just recorded new ones. And this research, or our research here, our podcast here, picks up where they've left off, and hopefully takes it in a slightly new direction. Not a better direction, just a new direction for someone else then to come along and do the same with. That's what I'm saying about the doors opening doors. We've already mentioned the acid-fueled first and second Summers of Love in 1967 and the second being in 88 to 89. And both of them fueled with LSD and the second Summer of Love fueled with ecstasy. We also spoke about the doors, talking of doors of opportunity. And the film by Oliver Stone released in 1992, reinserting Aldous Huxley's doors of perception into the tangled minds of that generation, our Chris being one of them. Oliver Stone also directed the 1991 film JFK, which is also linked to Aldous Huxley. These are all examples of links or echoes back to the Huxleys via mind control and MKUltra and eugenics, and many other things, many other programs that have been used upon us for generations. With me today, as usual, is our Chris. How are you doing?
Good afternoon. All right, you're right.
Not too bad. So you've read through this next podcast. I mean, it's quite a long one, is this one? It's longer than the first one, actually. What were your thoughts, what the parts you've read?
Yeah, it's interesting. Surprising, a lot of it. I mean, the MKUltra stuff is always fascinating, and we were just saying before we came on here, does everybody know about MKUltra? Because we talk that much about stuff, you forget what people actually know about and don't know about. Yeah. I'm guessing most people have heard of it.
Most people listening probably have. You go into Middle England, if I went round my neighbours here, probably less of them would talk to me. because I think if you mention, I mean, MKUltra or mind control, they'd look at you, even if, again, it's, you take them to the concentration camp, even if you showed them the church committee meetings, Senate meetings and all that type of stuff, and the evidence behind it all.
It's actually documented truth now. It's not a conspiracy, is it? It's an actual truth. But it's like I was saying to you, if I ask people about eugenics, a lot of people haven't heard of it. You just presume they have, but they haven't. And that's not saying that we're any cleverer than anyone else or anything, but it's just a subject that's not discussed, is it?
No, I mean, like people like us.
Eugenics, yeah, us nut jobs talk about it all the time. But is it in the normal world? I suppose it's to make a sound.
Well, it is in the normal world as soon as I turn the TV on. But they're 4K Ultra TV.
It wasn't there the 4K Ultra TV, as we've pointed out numerous times.
Which is MK Ultra TV.
Yeah, Fours and M. It has to be, doesn't it? It has to be. That has to be what it is. What else? What the reason would you have to call it a 4K Ultra TV?
I don't know. Yeah, but there are a lot of links. One thing I would say is that, and I think this might show that some of the things that we think are organic, we mentioned this in the first one. I'm sure a lot of people can see this who are listening, and some people, maybe they've just come over to this side of the divide, if you like. This we'll put in a nutshell the links back, even the organic things that we think are organic and organic. And what this research has done for me over this last 12 months is it's made me realize how endemic, how ingrained MK Ultra and eugenics are. We knew they were ingrained and the technologies that they're using, but this has just documented that these things are the thread running through everything. You can just see it. Can't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
And from this Huxley research, I've come to the conclusion, Chris, that all mental illness is based on or comes from MK-Ultra type mind control operations that are still running alongside eugenics programs. Because if you think about when we were young, none of our parents or our friends or any of us relations, to my knowledge, apart from one lady, I remember she, one of my dad's mates' wives, she had agoraphobia. She was the only one that I remember had any sort of mental illness that you'd think. Certainly autism weren't there. Certainly any of those type of things, we never heard of that type of thing, did we? They weren't on the radar is what I'm trying to say.
No. We passed MK-Ultra, don't we? En masse through TV and pharmaceuticals and numerous other things. So all this stuff that you're going to talk about has been done, but just en masse, rather than to individuals.
Yeah. Yeah, which is even more eerie. So speaking of Doors, the band The Doors, who were one of the movers and shakers in the 60s, constructed anti-establishment drugged out generation. Jim Morrison is linked to Huxley or the Huxleys in a few different ways. One was the fact that his band, The Doors, was named after Aldous Huxley's book, The Doors of Perception, which was itself a reference to a quote by the 18th century English artist and poet William Blake. The Doors of Perception was originally a metaphor written by Blake in his 1790 book, The Marriage of Heaven and Hell. The metaphor was used to represent Blake's feelings about mankind's limited perception of the reality around them. He said, "If the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear to man as if it is infinite. For man has closed himself up till he sees all things through narrow chinks of his cavern." And these were written in, well, there you go, a 1790 book. Interestingly, Blake is sometimes considered as one of the forerunners to the 60s free love movement, and he advocated the removal of all state restrictions on sexual activities such as homosexuality, prostitution, adultery, culminating in the birth control movement of the early 20th century, or the mid-20th century, via eugenic sterilization, which we saw, watched these eugenics programs that were carried out in America mainly, a lot of the times, and then in Nazi Germany, where they were sterilizing people who were unfit to have children. And the pill, at the start of the 60s, hippie revolution and free love. It's done subtly, isn't it, Chris? Mind control. It's done very subtly. They called it free love. Here's a pill. Here's a drug, enjoy it more.
Now you think about it, Faye, what does that pill do to people?
Well, it alters the hormones for a start.
Some people have some bad reactions to it, don't they? But people are just popping them and not really thinking of any long-term... I mean, does it have a long-term effect on you, on the lady taking it or the child when they do eventually decide to conceive?
Well, we've spoken about HRT, yeah? That's been dragged backwards and backwards. I would say 100 years ago, ladies might have gone through the change when they were 70 or 80, possibly. And then it would drag back, and it normalised now in the 40s. And the common denominator is that most women take the pill. I'm not saying it's just that thing, because there's obviously stuff in water and things like that, but it's certainly one of those things to look at. And also, by altering your hormones, it alters your mentality, doesn't it? Which comes back to another way of controlling people. The Doors of Perception is an autobiographical book written by Aldous Huxley, published in 1954. It elaborates on his psychedelic experience under the influence of mescaline that is derived from a certain cactus. Huxley recalls the insights he experienced, ranging from purely aesthetic to sacramental visions and reflects on their philosophical and psychological implications. Others who have tried mescaline are Jerry Garcia, vocalist with rock band Grateful Dead. Crow keeps going on about them. Colin said the people who followed them were called Deadheads.
Mm.
Allen Ginsberg, an American poet and writer. Jim Carroll, American author, poet, autobiographer, and punk musician, best known for his autobiographical work, The Basketball Diaries. Hunter S. Thompson, which he'll pop up in this presentation as well again, ironically. Best known for Fear and Loathing in Vegas, Las Vegas. Comedian George Carlin and Philip K. Dick, American science fiction writer. And Carlos Santana, guitarist, who was also part of the LA 60s set. Now, I haven't done really much background on these people. I'm not saying they're involved in anything. What we are saying is that this drug was introduced from nowhere and given to these people, and it became trendy. And we've got to say, most things that become trendy are some kind of control, aren't they?
Mm. Is mescaline still around now, then?
Well, it's a mushroom, isn't it? So mescaline's...
Isaac mushrooms, right.
Yeah.
Derivative of magic mushrooms, basically.
Yes. And they were using it as part of the... Remember in the first one, they were using it as part of, in episode one, as part of the MK Ultra stuff.
Mm.
Gottlieb were using it.
So it's virtually a natural LSD, I suppose, then.
Yeah. Well, all of these things are natural, aren't they? They're just what they take out as the active part to make it into a specific drug. So instead of eating the entire mushroom, they'll take the bit out that makes you hallucinate and utilise that, so it's like a condensed version.
But it's still synthetic, though, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm.
In October 55, Huxley had an experience while on mescaline that he considered more profound than those detailed in Doors of Perception. He decided his previous experiments, the ones detailed in Doors of Perception and his other book, Heaven and Hell, that's got to come from that poet, as well, William Blake, because that's where he wrote Heaven and Hell, had been temptations to escape from the central reality into false or at least imperfect and partial nirvanas of beauty and mere knowledge. These are the spells that went on to influence the public. What he's saying there is, by taking a drug, it takes you out of reality into a false reality that you think's real, into a nirvana. And that is what we've had done to us probably since the 60s, where we've been given that dream of materialism. People have been, however we call it, drugged, whether you're drinking water or Coca-Cola or taking pharmaceuticals or watching TV and it's altering your brain, we're being drugged.
Mm.
Some more than others, some more susceptible than others.
Well, also, just quickly, if I look at the past 3 years' nonsense, how we were drugged by foreign holidays, travel,
yes.
Being able to go anywhere we want. And then as soon as that's taken away, we can be
manipulated.
Talked into doing other things, manipulated.
Yeah, that you wouldn't want to do normally.
No, is that a drug? You're addicted to it, aren't you? It's kind of an addiction. Not a drug.
Well, it's an addiction, because most material items aren't. I mean, you can't say food's an addiction unless you're addicted to eating too much of it. It's a necessity, isn't it? But things outside that, any necessity like breathing, going to the toilet, you know, that type of thing, are material, aren't they? They're not necessary for your life. They've been inserted into your life to seem important. So we'll come to the Doors and Jim Morrison. And looking back, Jim Morrison had everything to become that 60s music icon, the right looks, the right songs, the right sound, and the right required military background. He was a film student at UCLA also, and we'll come on to that in a bit. He also had the right bloodline, which we're going to go into in deep detail towards the end of this presentation. Incidentally, the Doors members were keyboardist Ray Manzarek Jr., guitarist Robert Krieger, and drummer John Densmore. Regarding the before-mentioned Twilight language that we mentioned in episode one, if you remember, Twilight language came from Hinduism and Buddhism, and possibly of its usage in popular culture as a kind of subliminal, hypnotic, weaponized messaging program. Which probably comes back to us 4K Ultra TV, Chris, because if they've recognized frequencies that work, that can send people into some sort of trance, they're basically doing mass MKUltra experimentation using LSD and these frequencies from this music, this Twilight language.
I would hazard a guess, yes. I mean, I think I brought this up the other day, but if you look at a wall, a white wall in your room with a TV on, and you see the pulsing beats, that to me looks like, you know, hypnotic.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Yeah, it's like a flicker room. Like a flight.
Flicker rate,
Flicker rates. If you turn turn the lights off and watch the white light, if you like.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, yeah. Bouncing off the wall. And there's a reason that these 4K Ultra TVs have become so cheap. Because they want everyone to have one in their house, especially now. I mean, is it a coincidence they've got so cheap in the last 3 years?
No. I mean, now you can buy
16-inch ones.
How much for?
300 quid for ISO, 300 quid. Two to 300 quid you can get them for. Yeah. You can still pay top coin for them, but you can get them cheap.
Yeah, and people are going to buy them, aren't they? They're wired into internet straight away, beaming out Wi-Fi.
I mean, I've got one. Everyone's got a TV. Well, you know, not everybody, obviously, but you know, it's just a matter of how much you let it influence you, I suppose.
Yeah,
the main point of it, isn't it?
I suppose it's what you're watching on it. I mean, the flicker rate's always going to get you whether you like it or not, but it's what you're watching on it. Yeah. Before we get into the Doors, and I want to talk about MKUltra again, the impact this mind control program had worldwide in the 60s and the future generations can never really be underplayed. In episode one, we mentioned, and I've just mentioned him, Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, leader of the MKUltra operation for the CIA. One of the people that Gottlieb employed was a Scottish guy called Dr. Ewan Cameron. He was a Scottish-born psychiatrist, known today for his role in the unethical medical experiments and development of psychological and medical torture techniques for the CIA. This guy's a doctor, sentence. Chris. This guy's a doctor.
Yeah. I mean, I know that, 24, that TV show said that torture was all right, but it's nothing other than evil, is it, really?
Yeah, Jack Bauer.
That's it. I never watched it, but yeah.
And Kiefer Sutherland,
They put the fact that torture was all right into people's heads, didn't they? Mm. It was all right if you were after certain results, you know, it was all right. And funnily enough, then Guantanamo.
If you were good guys, yeah.
And it was all right, yeah. It's all right. It's all right to strap someone down and torture them. Fine, as long as you're getting right answers.
Yeah, well, I mean, en masse, you can see where this goes. He served, right, Cameron served, I'll give you a bit of his background. He was president of the American Psychiatric Association. He was president of the Canadian Psychiatric Association. He was president of the American Psychopathological Association. He was president of the Society of Biological Psychiatry. And he was president of the World Psychiatric Association. This is the power this guy wielded. And he's running an MKUltra operation for mind control torture techniques. Oh, sorry, medical torture techniques. Medical and torture shouldn't techniques. Be in the same sentence, should it?
Well, that just drums up that vision, doesn't it, of that guy unrolling his torture tools in a little cloth.
Yes.
Cloth roll, if you like.
Yeah. Which one shall I use? Which one shall I use?
Yeah. Which we've seen in numerous movies over the
years. Yes. Yeah. In 1940, I'll just rewind. It's not that much different from putting something at rack medieval times, is it?
No, it's more advanced, more technology cruel. Involved, I suppose. Yeah.
In 1945, Dr. Cameron was invited to the Nuremberg trials for a psychiatric evaluation of Rudolf Hess.
Right. Definitely a guy you get in for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't looked into whether he's related to David Cameron because he were from Scotland as well. That'd be interesting. This sounds similar to Jolie West's interrogation to Jack Ruby Slippers, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember in the first one where he went in and 45 minutes later, he's pissing in his own hand and drinking it. Yeah,
Well, also, you get a guy in who we've given all these basically accolades to, awards, society, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
All this stuff. So he's paid, isn't he? He's working for CIA. He's fully bought off, isn't he? Let's be honest.
Well, he's a Scottish guy working for CIA.
Let's get him involved in Nuremberg trials. We can steer Nuremberg trials whichever direction we want to.
Yeah. And he's a Scottish guy working for CIA in Canada. So who's he working for, really? I mean, this is like a Tavistock operation, a British operation, mind control, working with the Americans, you know. Since when does a Scottish guy work for CIA openly, doing mind control, torture experiments? So before his arrival at Nuremberg, Cameron had written, this is why we're good to interview Rudolf Hess, Cameron had written The Social Reorganization of Germany, in which he argued that German culture and its individual citizens would have to be transformed and reorganized. The paper stated that German culture and its people would have offspring bound to become a threat to world peace in 30 years. We've heard stuff like this before. To prevent this, the West would have to take measures to reorganize German society. Dr. Cameron's psychic driving experiments consisted of putting a subject into a drug-induced coma for weeks at a time, up to 3 months in one case, while playing tape loops of noise or simple statements. So there's 2 points there. One, this guy's head of psychiatry of numerous organisations, and he's going to says the West should take measures to reorganise Germany. Then he's sent out to Nuremberg to question one of the German leaders while he's on trial. Right? Nobody see any problems with that? Next thing, he's coming up with techniques called psychic driving, right? And he can put people in comas legally and not be ever prosecuted for it. And he's prosecuting Nazis who apparently were terrorising people, right? And yet he can do that and call them the bad guys, which I'm not saying they weren't, but he's a good guy.
Yeah.
Putting people into comas for 3 months at a time.
I never actually dawned on me that he put hypocrisy of everything.
It's on steroids.
He's coming up with Nuremberg law that you're not allowed to medically, not allowed to interfere with anyone medically without their permission.
Yeah.
But then he's doing it. Mm. And then he's in charge of it.
It's insane. Yeah, it's insane.
And it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be. I mean, imagine he's in a coma. Right, or she, they're in comas, and they're playing tape loops of noises and simple statements. Just simple statements, Chris. They're not swearing.
Again, on mass, they did that at Guantanamo Bay, didn't they? They were blaring out all kinds of stupid music.
Yeah. But what were they blaring out, Chris? You just said the word there. Mm. Music.
What was it?
Music.
Yeah, well, it was like children's music and stuff, wasn't it?
But it doesn't matter what the music is, does it? It's music.
Yeah.
And the 60s generation.
So you would hazard a guess his experiments led to that.
Yes.
Point,
yeah. And so then we in the pop culture began late 50s, but bang in the 60s when it exploded and mesmerized everybody and hypnotized everybody, even people that weren't taking LSD. Hmm. All had the favorite band and sung their favorite songs. Yeah. So MKUltra experimentation was undertaken at the Institute between 1957 and 1964, you're right. In addition to LSD, he experimented with various paralytic drugs, such as Curare, which is a common name for various alkaloids used in arrow poisons, originating from Colombia, I do believe, from plant extracts. So it's basically paralysing people.
Don't worry, we're the good guys.
We're the good guys. It's the Nazis that are the bad guys.
Yeah,
you know,
put them on trial.
Yeah, we're just being bad, so we're protecting you.
Yeah, we're being bad, so we can use it on Nazis.
Yeah, yeah. We've got to change and reorganize. Cameron also used electroconvulsive therapy at 30 to 40 times normal power.
Well, they're messing about these people. There shouldn't be a normal power, should there? For a
normal power, no. It's 10 times. It's just 10 times more. Jerry, I love this guy.
The normal level of electrocution is, but we need to do it 40 times more.
Yeah. The Montreal experiments were a series of experiments initially aimed to treat schizophrenia by changing memories and erasing the patient's thoughts. So that's what they're setting out to do. That's lobotomization, isn't it? During the 50s and 60s, Cameron became involved in the MKUltra mind control program. His work eventually led to the publication of Kubark, spelled K-U-B-R-A-R-K. So Kubark Counterintelligence Interrogation Manual. So all his work that he did, he came up with that. That's what came out of it, the other end.
So somewhere there's a book on torture, a torture manual.
Yes. I think there's two now. They're moving on. There's part two, I think.
All right.
And there's probably obvious a sequel. And these are the ones they're telling you about.
Yeah.
And it describes the use of abusive techniques, like the use of electric shock, as I mentioned, in addition to the use of threats and fear and sensory deprivation and isolation. Where were you heard that before?
Fear and isolation. Weird.
That'll never happen on a world basis. So what I'm trying to get to, that work in the 1950s, 60s that can be used en masse, we saw happen in March 2020.
Well, you could also say, was Guantanamo Bay another experiment fire? That was
definitely
taking it en masse before it became en masse. You know what I mean? That was like
a mini mass.
Individual. And let's do it in this camp where no one's allowed to look in and see what's actually going on, where they've got all these poor guys and gals.
Yeah,
we've got no chance of it. I mean that in itself is horrendous, isn't it? Is it still there, that bloody place?
Well, it's on Cuba. Do you know America's Enemy? And it's been on Cuba. It's been on Cuba
there
for 100 years. But they were their enemy. Mm. So all the way through Cuban missile crisis, American Navy had a base on Cuba.
Little jail there.
They had a cute base on jail. You would do, wouldn't you, with your enemy? They'd just allow it. Yeah. Yeah. So MKUltra was intended to develop procedures to identify drugs that could be used in interrogations to weaken individuals and force confessions. I will take that. Through brainwashing and psychological torture.
Psychological torture.
Yeah. MKUltra began in 1953 and was altered in 1973. Of course it was. It used numerous methods to manipulate its subjects' mental states and brain functions, such as covert administration of high doses of psychoactive drugs, especially LSD, and other chemicals without the subject's consent. And also it used not just electroshocks, but hypnosis, sensory deprivation, verbal and sexual abuse, and other forms of torture. So MKUltra was preceded by two other drug-related experiments, Project Bluebird and Project Artichoke. It was organised through the CIA's Office of Strategic Intelligence and coordinated with the United States Army and Biological Warfare Laboratories. So the goal of Artichoke was to determine whether a person could involuntarily be made to perform an act like an attempted assassination. So this is where... So MKUltra is a spin-off from the Manchurian candidates. The project also studied the effect of not just hypnosis, but forced addiction, what we were talking about at the beginning, and subsequent withdrawal from morphine and other chemicals to produce amnesia and other vulnerable states in subjects. Artichoke researched the potential of dengue fever and other diseases. A classified Artichoke memo read, "Not all viruses have to be lethal. The object includes those that act as short-term and long-term incapacitating agents." The term incapacitating agent is defined by the United States Department of Defense as an agent that produces temporary psychological or mental effects, or both, which will render individuals incapable of concerted effort in the performance of their assigned duties. It describes an agent which renders a person unable to harm themselves or others, regardless of consciousness. This is what our governments are doing with our tax money. This is it. Dr. Cameron's work was funded by an under subgroup called MK Ultra Subproject 68. And he was the co-founder and director, not just the president of all those psychiatric associations, between 1957 and 1964, of the Allen Memorial Institute, known as the Allen. It's situated on the slope of Mount Royal on the McGill University campus. On a side note, if you remember from our Trudeau podcast, Margaret Trudeau, the former wife of Canadian Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, had a mental breakdown as a result of whatever was going on in Ottawa during her marriage to Pierre Trudeau. The reason, apparently, according to Cathy O'Brien, was that she came home early to find a full-blown sex party taking place at their home. She was put under the control and care of a psychiatrist named Dr. Dmitry Pivinicki of the Montreal Allen Memorial Institute, which is or was part of the McGill University. Pivinicki was trained by Dr. Ewan Cameron, or Donald Cameron. More notable people went to McGill University. There were 12 Nobel laureates, 145 Rhodes Scholars, 5 astronauts, the Governor General of Canada, 15 Justices of Canadian Supreme Court, at least 8 foreign leaders, over a dozen members of the Canadian Parliament, the United States Congress, British Parliament, and 10 billionaires, 6 Academy Award winners, 3 Grammy Award winners, 4 Pulitzer Prize winners, 2 Presidential Medals of Freedom recipients, and 5 Emmy Award winners. William Shatner was one of these notable people who went to McGill University, and Shatner was part of the constructed invention of modern space and science fiction on TV into millions of minds. The Montreal experiment goals were to induce lifelong changes in humans. Pierre Trudeau went there, and so did his son Justin Trudeau as well. You have to ask yourself, Chris, don't you? Well, can we see these influences playing out in front of us?
I mean, it's becoming more and more relevant, even when I read it through the first time, that this is leading up to now, I would say.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, they've done it since then, but I mean, now is literally all this research and all these experiments literally going to the last 3 years, don't they?
Yes.
Funny and as all, well that no, Trudeau's missus went mad as well, like BJ's missus, the mum. Mm. What's with all these women going mad, you know?
Yeah. It's odd. But then that's passed down to the children as well, isn't it? Mm. They're seeing that traumatic behaviour. The mum going, but all these people going to these universities, let's just say they know that they can spread this, we'll call it twilight language for want of a better word, this spell around. And so clever people go to university and they know if they pump this frequency through there, they're going to catch. All these people that go on to become leaders or whatever, influential people, that they've now mind-controlled without their knowledge, which is what they've said they're doing. Mind-controlled without their knowledge, these people, the information that they need to gather to go and turn out to a generation later, a Justin Trudeau, who's like Blair, just a raging psychopath.
Mm. All them judges as well. Was it 15 judges in there?
Yeah, 15 judges.
It just occurred to me, imagine the influence if you've got 15 judges in your pocket.
Yeah. Well, again, it's like that. We've mentioned this before, but that school that you looked at, I forget which one it was now, that one that Chris Whitty went to, and all them generals were there. Yeah. Mm. And let's just say you're in trenches in 1915 or whatever, and that one general 2 miles back has made a decision to go over top at 6 o'clock in the morning. And you know, sat in that trench, that either you, your mates, one out of 2 is going to be injured, and 1 out of 8 is going to be dead, or whatever it is, what the figures were.
I think you were more than that. But yeah,
whatever it is, right? And he just says, no, you're doing it. And that one person can wipe out 50,000 people on a morning by that decision.
Also, like you said, 5 astronauts in there. And now,
yeah.
I would ask
William Shatner
to be an astronaut. William Shatner. To be an astronaut, you've got to be a liar.
Or brainwashed or mind controlled.
Or
not know you're a liar.
To believe.
The astronaut, I mean, William Shatner in there, is a good one because he's still pumping that information out. We're going on the Amazon giant dildo.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Nobody cried so it was real far. Never mind that he's an actor. He cried when he landed and said it was amazing.
Right.
Even though he only just went really high in the sky.
Yeah, just a bit higher than a plane does. I'm now convinced, and will state as a matter of opinion, that worldwide mental illness is MKUltra. I don't think you need any more evidence to say that this has been a planned out and orchestrated event to cause people to go insane. Just look at this, right? If you think about it, there was someone on Breakfast TV the other day where this guy were on saying he identified as a wolf, right?
Not wrong with that.
Not wrong with that. 20 years ago...
I used to think we're a wolf, but I'm all right now.
20 years ago, he would have been treated for some kind of mental illness. Now you can't even question it. That's where we've got to.
But also, why is it on TV? Why is it on the news?
Yes. Why is it on the 4K MK Ultra TV?
Is that real? Is that news? If I said I now identify as a dog, would I be on the news? Mm. So that's another reason that it's 4K Ultra, MK Ultra TV, because somebody's put it there to do something to you.
Yes.
Whether it's to normalize it or cause a reaction in your brain, I don't know.
Examples of modern day MK Ultra here in the UK and around the world, I suppose, are the Nudge Unit, now known as the Behavioural Insights Team, or BIT, or BIT. And it uses the same social engineering techniques as we've just heard Dr. Ewan Cameron's work on MKUltra and Gottlieb and all these other people, but without the drugs. It uses psychology, behavioural economics. I mean, what are these words? Why do we need behavioural economics, you know? Just as we saw in 2020 around the world, in one swoop, March, closed everything down. Everything stopped. Everything. The BIT is a worldwide business. In December 2021, the group became only owned by a charity called Nesta. What could go wrong? Nesta was conceived in part thanks to the vision of Oscar-winning director Baron David Putnam. Putnam produced films for Sir Ridley Scott and Ken Russell, who we mentioned in the first one, who did Devils, which was written by Aldous Huxley.
And I would hazard a guess, I know I've talked about this before, but I think Ridley Scott's chief player in the...
Machine.
Yeah, definitely. He makes films with a lot of programming in them. As did Ken Russell, as we talked about.
Yeah. And I think they're put in these positions, Chris, and allowed up the ladder and... I wouldn't say told as much as given things to make, yeah? Because they only make films that they can get funding for. Mm. So if they can't get funding for it because that's not the narrative they want out, then they'll put a film there that they know is going to get the narrative out.
Maybe if you put that bit of narrative in there, then we will give you that.
Exactly, yeah. Like the global climate warming change. Right, we put this, making this film, it's got global climate warming change in, trannies. Right.
There's your briefcase full of cash.
There's your briefcase full of cash. Anyway, Nesta is known as the National Endowment for Science, Technology and the Arts. So why would they need a behavioural insights team working for that? Bear in mind, Baron David Putnam, Sir Ridley Scott, Ken Russell, they make films or made films. They are in control of TV sets, pumping this stuff out. And it's an innovation foundation, Chris, in the UK. Putnam was also chairman and CEO of Columbia Pictures. So there you go. He was also a UNICEF ambassador. In 2021, Nesta announced a 10-year strategy that would be focused on three major areas: childhood inequality, public health, and a sustainable economy. All this from a National Endowment for Science, Technology and the Arts. Nesta owns the Nudge Unit, the Behavioural Insights Team. Why would this arts charity, if you like, need to own a behaviour that behaviour insights team, other than from a propaganda or programming perspective? This is how it works. That's how it works. We put that guy in control of that. Then producers and directors in control of that. It all looks lovely on outside. We get an actor to smile in at the camera and talk about how fantastic this charity is. But in reality, behind the scenes, they're just MKUltra-ing you. The fact that most of us in the world, I've said the most of us, I'm not, and Chris isn't, but most of us in the world are on repeat prescriptions of medications. And these might not be pharmaceutical. They could be BBC One, BBC Two, or ITV. Medicated prescriptions of TV, 4K Ultra.
Well, EastEnders prescribed to me twice a week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you must watch EastEnders. Or they inhale, or drink, or eat toxins, or they're sprayed from skies, or in the water, eat via GMO foods, etc. It doesn't matter. It's a weaponized delivery system, stroke device. Same as the LSD operations were done in MKUltra. You know, we've seen it on the people on the doorsteps banging pots and pans, you know, the mass psychosis. You know what I mean? We've seen it buying toilet roll, things like this. This is that.
Yeah, yeah.
This is exactly what Huxley wrote about and what Orwell wrote about. And Huxley said, "And we're going to enjoy a servitude." Again, well,
we need to enjoy it, otherwise we'll stand up, won't we?
Yeah, well, people probably won't have any choice to enjoy the servitude because they won't know any different. They won't even think it's servitude. A slave who thinks they're free is the best slave, isn't it?
Mm.
Dr. Ewing, this is an interesting part of this, and this is the bit that freaked me out a little bit, and I'm sure it did you when you read through it. Dr. Cameron wanted to extend the concept of contagion to chronic anxiety. Imagine mental illness as a social contagion. Imagine that. That is what we've got. We've got
that. They did it, didn't they, Fatty, with that whole discussion about mental illness.
Yes.
You've gone from, you know, I suppose, people saying they weren't feeling too good mentally or they're having anxiety to people now talk about my mental health and they say it about themselves. Whereas it used to be someone would say that guy's losing it or whatever. People are self-subscribing themselves with mental health problems.
Yeah. Or they say I'm on the spectrum or...
Yeah, exactly. But it's become... And they didn't make it like... To say I'm on the spectrum would be like an insult to yourself. It was made as like a
badge of honor. And
yeah, kind of a badge of honor.
And I think this is not ridiculing anybody who's got mental issues, by the way.
Not at all. And we all go through bad times and good times.
Yeah, I certainly
want to do is...
Yeah, with Lyme disease, yeah.
You don't want to have any bad times. You're not allowed to have any bad times. It's because we can medicate it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. What we're saying is that these bad times, these mental illness intrusions in his lives are inserted. It's part of an operation.
Yeah, that's the difference. When we all have bereavements and deaths and, you know, lose a job or split up with a spouse or wherever, but this is different, isn't it? Because the trauma now being delivered to humanity is done on purpose.
Yes.
It's manufactured. It's not real.
No, it's not organic.
It can be real, but it's not an issue that would affect you as a human being unless it was forced on you by the telebox.
Yeah. But so this is what they were researching in, I'll say, the 50s and 60s and onwards, but it would before that, but social mental contagion. So you imagine that just the ability to for people with mental illness to transmit their diseases to others.
Yeah, those three words shouldn't be together, should they?
No.
Social, mental, contagion.
Like I said, this is what they're working with. They're working in researching in the 50s and 60s and onwards. The word transmit means to transmit is to broadcast out electrical waves or signals or radio or television programs. Look at what they're saying to us. This is what it means. E.g., the program was transmitted on the 7th of October or the 22nd of November, if we want to be right on what we're talking about, or March 2020. The program was transmitted on March 2020. That adds a different meaning to that, doesn't it? It also means to cause something to pass from one person or place to another. So these are the real meanings of these words, and this is what they're working towards. We're surrounded. This is electrical talk and comms talk. How we're involved in comms. This is how they build these transmitters. This is what they do. They're using electrical frequencies and communication technologies. We're surrounded by antennas and transmitters. We're walking antennas and transmitters. Cameron warned the governments and institutions that they should take measures against such potential liabilities. Now, that word there is doublespeak. Because when they're saying stuff like that, they should take measures against such potential liabilities, that means we're going to do it first.
Mm.
That means we need to work on this because somebody else is going to get there before us. Hence why they put the shoulder behind it, and they had all these people like Cameron, Jolie West, and all these other people that Gottlieb set on to do all this experimental work. So I'll just want to remind, Cameron argued that people with mental illnesses could spread and transmit their mental diseases and possibly other illnesses. Who does this sound like, Chris?
Hmm.
Professor Giordano pushing his...
Yeah.
I'll turn everybody into hypochondriacs.
Make a few people ill. Everyone else will turn into hypochondriacs.
Yes. Make a few people ill.
Viruses spread on it.
Imagine if this could be achieved via music, TV, film, and even the written word. Were they tapping into Twilight language frequencies or spells, whatever we want to call them, hidden subliminal messaging that could turn something on? Because as we know, Chris, we've done research and we've looked at stuff and we spoke to other people, and this type of trauma can be passed down to generations, to people's children.
I've always thought that, yeah.
Can it be brought out? You know, so these people watch this stuff over and over and over again, and they put the VR headset on as well, you know.
Not only passed down, though, Fatty, then the next generation of politicians and leaders, wherever, they then use that as well to make it worse instead of better. What I mean is, if you got some say, genetic trauma, it could probably be cured, couldn't it? Or it could be eased, should we say. But if someone wants it to be worse, and then you've traumatized a generation and a generation, it's just going to get worse and worse, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And then, you know, I was just thinking when you read that bit was, if you go into Waterstones, for example, bookshop, I'm guessing what the most of the books that surround you in your house and surround me in my bookshelf here, you can't buy in Waterstones.
No.
So you walk into Waterstones. Waterstones is... I'm using that as an example, but a bookshop like that, you can't... Well, it could be that we're nuts and we buy crazy books. There could be that, so they don't want them in high street shops. But if you go into a high street bookshop, you'll pick up the same books in every shop, but you won't get the obscure ones. What I'm saying is the ones that are there are the ones they want you to read.
Yes. Just like the TV programs, they're the ones that want it. I went to the clinic and they had Sky News on, and all it had were train crash, this, that, this, missing baby, blah, blah. Mm. And that's what they're pumping out. And it was strange because I'd not seen the news. I can't remember last time I watched the news live. I can't remember. And
I used to watch it through the nonsense. But I can't stuck it now.
No, I can't stomach really listening to the people on it. The frequency of the voices turns me off. I can't stand the information.
Then, do you remember even before the nonsense and through the nonsense, you used to be able to predict what was coming next. You could predict what was going to be in the news the next day because you could see the build-up.
Yeah.
I could, anyway. I could see the build-up of what they were discussing in the morning, and then they'd have a solution by the evening or the next day.
Yeah, it's so transparent.
So blatant, so transparent.
But maybe the downside to these frequencies, Chris, and the downside to like the 80s and 90s Second Summer of Love was, it froze people, you know, the drug culture froze people. But maybe some people, it did the opposite to. Like we said about the internet, some of these things have the opposite effect that they can't control. Or maybe they do. Maybe they think they control it because they know it's going to happen. But, you know, the information that we got from the internet, for instance, you know.
An example is they released the internet, right? A large amount of people start watching cat videos, you know. A large amount of people, you know, go off and watch people dancing or whatever. Then a minority of people go and look into things a little bit deeper,
yeah,
that interest them. I'm not just saying what we talk about, but you know, it could be.
Could be anything.
Ghosts. It could be all kind of, you know.
Yeah.
But some people maybe find out things that, to better themselves, shall I say, let me put it like that, to better themselves mentally. Or is it just to entertain yourself, you know, or is it a bit of both, or, you know, I don't know.
Well, I mean, entertainment, I mean, we're not the first ones to say this, but enter the mind. So I don't look at this as entertaining me. I look at it as learning. People who watch cat videos, it's entertaining.
I've watched a few cat videos with my daughter, to be fair.
Yeah, some of them. That's different. Fair. She's she's allowed to because she's a kid. Kids do stuff like that. So I want to go into some of the Indian music that was around in the 60s. And I found this fascinating when I was doing this research. Like most of the research, you don't realise what you're going to uncover. And I got into this quite by accident as well. Back to the 60s and the use of Indian music and gurus, and some of these gurus, as we shall see, have their links to elite families and the British ruling government, the colonial government. The Kinara School of Music, Kinara spelled K-I-N-N-A-R-A, so if I pronounce that wrong, I apologise, was a music school founded in Bombay, India in 1962 by Indian classical musician Ravi Shankar. With his increased popularity and influence in the West, Shankar opened a second branch of the Kinara School of Music in Los Angeles in May 1967, right on time for the LSD-weed-fueled hippie summer of love and the constructed peace movements. What have we seen in the 60s, or since the 60s? Mass depressions, suicides publicised by superstars of the day that everybody looks up to, like Nirvana's Kurt Cobain. I mean, Nirvana is also Hindu Indian meaning, isn't it? The perfect state or a state. And there we've got him with his smiley face, with his dented skull. Yeah, with a dint at the side of his head.
Crossed eyes and his tongue hanging out.
Yeah. I mean, again, is it so obvious?
Is that even, that's a subliminal in itself, isn't it? You've got a suicide of dead, and the word above it is Nirvana.
Yeah.
You will find heaven and peace if you just shoot top of your head off.
Yeah. And what was the first song? Teenage Spirit or something?
I don't know. I can't say. I know
it was something like that, wasn't it? Smell of Teenage Spirit or something like that. I mean, It seems to me via this research that things like mental illness, like I've said before, are possibly passed via twilight language we spoke about in episode one, via the experiments carried out by the lunatics like Dr. Ewan Cameron. Ravi Shankar's concept for Kinara was to further the strict Guru Shishna tradition in Indian origin religions. The human potential movement arose out of the counterculture of the 1960s and formed around the concept of an extraordinary potential that advocates believed to lie largely untapped in all people. This goes again to some kind of program running. When you read it like that, that lies untapped in all people. Mm. They're trying to look for something out there. It's a eugenics program. If you had a eugenicist saying that, you go, all right, yeah, that makes sense, wouldn't you? Mm. LSD and rock music were the keys to unlock this untapped potential, probably for control. The movement takes as its premise the belief that through the development of their human potential, people can experience a life of happiness, creativity, and fulfillment, and that such people will direct their actions within society towards assisting others to release their potential. They believe that the collective effort of individuals cultivating their own potential will be positive change in society at large. For whom, I ask, is this positive change, Chris? Does that sound a bit like Dr. Ewan Campbell's thing he wanted Germans to become when he went to Nuremberg? We've got to reorganise them. But the opposite has happened, as we've just been talking about, because that was the plan. To soften up the population of the world using drugs and subliminal messaging, making us more susceptible to their eugenics programmes. It is now known, like we said before, that we pass on the trauma via DNA to our offspring. Is this the same for all these experiments, like the human potential movement? It was regarded as, by some, as being related to the psychedelic culture, such as hippies and the Summer of Love, which we now know was a huge psyop. And here we go. George Harrison. Go on, sorry, go on.
No, sorry, I was just going to say, just thinking about what you were saying there, could even be said that maybe they softened us up in 80s and 90s, fine.
I'm sure
ready
they did.
And maybe 2000s, well, 80s, 90s more so. Maybe ready, and if you genetically take trauma down, maybe it's softening up our kids.
Yes.
So that when they do traumatise them, they'll be more traumatised.
Bit by bit.
And we always moan about the snowflakes and all that lot.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the idea. Soften us all up, ready for the Chuck Norris Roundhouse, as we say.
Yeah. When I said just said then, bit by bit. Yeah. When I said bit by bit then, that's your behavioural insights team, isn't it? BIT. Mm. Bit by bit. Yeah. So George Harrison's adoption of Hindu philosophy as an Indian instrumentation in his songs with the Beatles in the mid-60s, together with the band's highly publicised study of transcendental meditation, truly kick-started the human potential movement. The HPM, human potential movement, has much in common with humanistic psychology in that Abraham Maslow's theory of self-actualization strongly influenced its development. So I haven't done out on Abraham Maslow, but he's another one that came up with all these programs. Although he wasn't torturing people, these people do it after. They can do it with a smile, can't they? There can be a smiling knife. They don't have to do that. They can come up with self-actualization and give you five things that mean you're self-actualizing type of thing. And if you're not self-actualizing, then you're a failure. But that, by following that self-actualization, leads you into a trap of thinking you're doing well. But yeah.
Or just making you feel bad, just generally. You know, just quickly, I opened a magazine the other day, like a Sunday magazine, and it had the 9 things you should have in your kitchen or out, you know, trendy things. The kitchens were massive with all this expensive. And what the point is you read these things in magazines or even fashion stuff, and it's just to make people feel like shit, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Basically. 10 things your husband should be doing for you that are totally, exactly. That are totally outlandish, right? They're never going to be able to do any of them.
5 things you should have in your relationship.
Yeah.
This is what you should have in your house this summer. You know,
a banning of magazines, one of them.
Yeah.
And George Harrison here, right, I'm going to come on to him in a little bit, but his adoption of Hindu philosophy and Indian instrumentation. Now, I know Mike Williams has talked about him in the past being a limited guitarist, yet he's now classed as this guru of Hindu philosophy and the sitar. And he kickstarted the human potential movement. And then we've go back to Tavistock being part of the Beatles setup, and Huxley obviously part of all this human potential movement and Tavistock and things like that. But two other interesting characters popped up in my research, and they were or are Michael Murphy and Dick Price. Both attended the hotbed of CIA representation, Stanford and Harvard universities.